Barney again, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. The United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of students who dedicated to broadcasting the philosophy of Theosophy. Its declaration is a declaration, a dedication of principles. These principles are based on three universal principles which underlie all life. The first principle enunciated is that of independent devotion. Independent devotion allows each student the freedom to study, work, maintain loyalty and gratitude to the great founders of the Theosophical movement. This idea is further extended by the fact that ULT has no constitution, bylaws, nor officers. For these would be detrimental to the spiritual growth and development of individuals and collectively. It also does not make any distinctions of race, color, creed, and so forth, because these are avenues that the soul uses for expression on this plane of existence. It does, however, has as its priority the practice of universal brotherhood. And so the unity that exists between the offices is based on aim, purpose, and teaching. The aim and purpose is to form a nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity. And so this lodge welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. Now, ULT is located on four continents, and because of that, there are great distances that exist between them. Nevertheless, they operate autonomous of each other, but are united by following the principles based on the declaration. Now, here in Philadelphia, our program consists of two weekly meetings on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 until 9 o'clock, and on Sunday mornings from 11 until 12 noon. Now, on Wednesday evenings, there is a study in the Ocean of Theosophy, and the class is currently studying the Doctrine of Reincarnation, and this will continue for next Wednesday. On Sundays throughout the month of January, there was a theme, the Path of Spiritual Evolution. And the subject for the talk today is the sole purpose of life. And following these presentations on Sunday mornings is always a time for questions and discussion. This being the last Sunday of the month, we will announce next Sunday, which is February 2nd, and the theme for that month of February is the Masterwork of Modern Theosophy. And the subject next Sunday will be what is unveiled in Isis Unveil. Now, on Wednesday, the 16th of March, there will be a special meeting commemorating the works of William Q. Judge. And the subject of that talk will be a great theosophist, William Q. Judge, and we invite everyone to attend this meeting. Now, on Wednesdays throughout the year, the reference library is open from 5:30 to 7:30. It carries a straight line of theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines, and there are other texts available. Should you be interested in any of these, we suggest you contact the student librarian. Now, just outside of the library, you'll find books, all kinds of literature, straight line theosophy on display for purchase. And this may be taken care of either during the library hours or before or after our regular meetings. All activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, and all are most welcome to participate.
Now, before we start, since we have the last discussion being today on this, we just wanted to go quickly over this whole main idea of January, the idea of the path of spiritual evolution. And it is through these discussions we've already had that we should get a keener idea of what we're talking about. The first one was the ideal and evidence of human perfectibility. The possibility is within each one. Then we had that discussion on behind will stands desire, which went from a universal level down to man's thinking. And then, of course, last week was very good because it was the keys and the obstacles to soul progress. And then, as we said, today we're going to be hearing about the soul purpose of life. And that gives us the idea that the whole meaning of evolution is an unfolding from within outward. So we will hear the discussion, and then we will have a time period for comments and questions.
Well, we have some intrepid souls who have braved the elements today. We are soul. We are, that is our nature. That is our very being. We are not, the soul cannot be taken away from us. And the sparks, we are all sparks of the divine. Myriads of sparks of the divine. The way that we become inflamed is by contact with one another. That is what kindles the fire and the spirit within us all. And that is done through altruism and self-sacrifice. We need to learn how to get the personality out of the way, to get out of our own ways and to reach out to others. So we must become fearless, because there really is no reason to fear. There is nothing that can destroy us. We are eternal beings incarnating life after life after life. The whole purpose of life, the whole purpose is for soul knowledge and experience, so that we can make a nosegay, as it were, of the flowers that we, the nectar that we gather, like the bees. Now, we incarnate from age to age for the preservation of the just, the destruction of wickedness, and the establishment of righteousness. And we have, as examples, we have great souls that we see throughout the ages, like Buddha, Krishna, Christ. These are perfected human beings. Mahatmas. Maha meaning great, Atma meaning soul. Great soul. Now, these great souls have appeared in physical form and bodies, but we should not expect to meet them in this lifetime. They are working behind the scenes, and it should not be our object to see them in the flesh. When we take a step toward them, they certainly take at least one, if not two or three steps towards us in return. And they are, you know, they through prior periods of evolution, and that is what we're here for, is evolution of soul. They have perfected themselves so that if we can perfect ourselves during this period of evolution, then we can help on all nature, all the kingdoms below us, because they all have the germ of self-consciousness within them. We are self-conscious, sentient beings. We are self-reflective. And we can eventually, through eons of time, because we're told that we have been incarnating for 18 million years. And during that period, we've really had all experience, but we need to really open up our hearts and our minds. The spirit, the triad that we are, the immortal ego, is made up of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. It's spirit, spiritual soul, and mind. Mankind, or man, which of course includes women as well, we are all mind beings, but the spirit is only working consciously through the manas. But we are to raise our manas, our mind, and mind being the power behind brain. Brain is just an instrument. It is universal mind, which we are trying to tap into. So Buddhi is spiritual soul. It is discernment. It knows directly. And we, through altruistic acts, through loving all and judging none, we can become, we can open up that intuition, that heart. And then the heart is ruling the mind. And the repository of all experience and all knowledge is within our heart. So the upward progress of the pilgrim soul, and that's what we are, we're all pilgrims. It's a series of progressive awakenings. And the end in view is self-realization by individual self-induced and self-devised methods. Now, we had a discussion recently, what do we induce first or devise first? I guess maybe we do it simultaneously. We get the desire to help humanity. So that induces us to devise methods of helping our brothers and sisters. We don't usually have to look too far to find our duty. It's usually right in front of us. But we can also be inspired to do great works. And that if that fire is kindled within us, and if our imagination makes the image strong enough, we can do so. And so we have examples of Gandhi, who Mohandas Gandhi. He never really liked the term Mahatma Gandhi, but people generally speak to him that way, about him that way. One of his contemporaries started calling him that, and it kind of caught on. But through nonviolent means, he was able to bring down an empire, as it were. And liberate his people. And then we see examples in this country like Martin Luther King, who through nonviolence achieved tremendous results. Nelson Mandela, through nonviolence, he worked with his oppressors. So that soul is this intangible thing, which we really are. It's not something we can nail down. It's not material. It's a very, in a sense, it's very refined and homogeneous material, but not material as we would think of material. It's not materialistic, but it is, like Bodhi is the most ethereal. It is the vehicle for Atma, which is pure spirit. And Bodhi is the observer. It looks down upon the ideas. So, as we said, the spark of the incarnating soul is turned to a flame only by contact with other souls. So, going to an ashram or is fine, but generally speaking, going to a monastery and isolating oneself is a selfish act. We need to be in the world, but not of the world. We need to reach out to those that need us, and to love our enemies. If people spite us, we need to not be spiteful in return. We need to inwardly realize our divine presence. This is the reality. As we said, there's one indivisible, homogeneous essence that pervades the entire universe. The entire universe exists for the evolution of soul. In closing, we'd like to mention that it is all for the experience and emancipation of the soul, for the manifested matter. we are to raise manifested matter up to the stature, nature, and dignity of conscious godhood. Evolution is a forever becoming. It is a journey without end.
Thank you. So hopefully we've hit upon some ideas that we might bring up for questions or answers or comments. Yes?
We heard several times the evolution of the soul. We thought the soul was perfect.
We also know that your comment is that we thought the soul was perfect. There's a running comment that most all of us have heard, that statement, the soul knows what it needs. If we look at the idea that this universal spirit, and that we're an aspect of it, it's within us. There is the knower, and there is the knowing. The soul knows what it needs, and it's through experience, external experience, through situations, through different combinations, but outwards things, that is the only way it can be learned and understood and relearned. We don't really look at ourselves as souls. Most of us look in the mirror and we're the personality that we see every day and know. There is a part of our nature which was mentioned, that Bodhi. It's what we call the storehouse of experiences. So there is a part of us through all these millions and millions of lifetimes that we could possibly have gone through, that we have learned certain things, we have experienced certain things, we are harmonious with him. And yet there is a lot we have unlearned. We are here, if we technically look for it, for our faults, not all the attributes that we might have gained. Yes.
Perhaps one way would be to consider someone like Ludwig von Beethoven. He could have said from an early age, I am an amazing composer, and then never done anything with it. Would he then have been an amazing composer? You have to take the potency and turn it into a reality. So we're here to realize we are spiritual beings and use that while we're here. This is our workplace, our school, and this body and brain are our workbook.
Yes, just as stated, you know, each life, each personality that lives in each lifetime can only express so much in that lifetime. Whereas this idea of a journey that we're on, this idea of us being a pilgrim, sort of makes sense that the more we can experience and have inner contact with others, and not only of the human source, but let's just think about the lower kingdoms, the responsibility that we have to those lower kingdoms below man, the thinker, which those lives that make up in those units of, shall we say, intelligence that each of them have, they're all part of us, within us. We use them daily, in and out, with our breathing. Yes.
The initial question regarding if the soul is perfect, then what is it that we have to perfect? Well, can we look at the principle of mind, since when it incarnates, it's dual, and part of it kind of tends towards the passions and desires, and the other aspect towards beauty, then can we say then that when we're looking at soul progress, that it's that principle of mind that we're actually looking at perfecting to have it function more towards beauty than towards the passions?
Very good point, that idea of the duality. And we all know we have this duality. We have a part of our nature that will want to do something because we love it and we want it. And there's another part of our nature that does things because it's right in front of us and it's there to be done. Just do it and be involved. So if we look at that part of our nature, we have to understand again, is there such a thing as a balance? Can one walk a certain path and not be affected either too high or too low? Well, some of the people that we would know historically have been mentioned already this morning in the talk. Those individuals that have been through enough experiences and contacts that in one lifetime they can express the proper way, the balanced way, the harmonious way to live with all nature. Yes.
We are told here that we have been incarnating on this plane for 18 million years. Is that correct?
Yes, because sometimes I get 15 and I don't know where it's from.
Many times before, many. And the way this life is going, I must have done a lot of things so that I can't find my way anymore. It's all darkness because I have lived lives. You know, we know what this life is. It's how difficult it is and how much we have pulling at us. You know, our lower nature. So I think our karma has a lot to do with us realizing what we are.
Very much so. Our karma, our causes and effects, the causes we've set up previously, will eventually have their effects. In one lifetime, like this one now, you could not experience all the effects of the causes that we have set up, life after life after life after life. But this fact that you're sitting here and even thinking of these ideas lets you give you a glimmer, there's got to be more than what I see right now.
It was mentioned that these masters, these perfected beings, we'll probably never meet them. But I've come into these rooms for many years, and I feel like I've met them. I've read their books, what they have written down, their understanding of life, their compassion. It's sort of like an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not here bodily, their essence is really present in this building, and it's really present within each one of us as much as we study and want to be of help to humanity.
And we can say where thinkers of the same kind gather and exist, yes, you should be able to feel something within. And that should give you more to think. Let's not think about the past, because I can't do anything about what was, but I can live in the now. I can live and try to balance myself, to learn that idea of that middle path. And we all have the ability to do this. And one of the proofs we can say is at night, when this physical body goes and puts itself at rest, and we go through dream states into deep sleep states, it says that that true part of our nature, when we're in the deep sleep, is on its level of consciousness with all. The process of bringing anything learned coming back could be the problem for any one personality in any one lifetime. Yet there are those who have gained knowledge and gained and could remember the experience of a higher nature and brought it back to this waking state. For humanity as we stand today, it is only in this waking state that we're able to really learn and experience. Yes, you had a question?
You're saying that this process started over 16 million years ago. What was happening before that? What reason to start to search for?
The reason to start the search. In the writings, these ancient teachings, the fact of the matter is the real part of the nature of us, that real higher nature, has been existing in other planets, mm-hmm. other degrees of substance, and constant development that comes out from that will of that desire, that existence, that in past periods of evolution, not just this evolution that we're in, there has been a constant process of building back what we once had. Because if in truth we are aspects of this true spirit, we have within us and we have without us the ability to know it and exist, that it exists, that constant evolution will go on in other periods, in other universes, and constantly, if we look around us to the universe and look at all the different things and all the different cycles that different planets have, different degrees, and with science the way it is, constantly finding new areas that go on and on, you cannot think of a place that there's not space, for instance. We live in space, we move in space, but it doesn't, we can move back and forth. It doesn't interfere. Space just is. So that deific principle that we're talking about does exist, and it has existed. And after we've learned everything that we could possibly learn in this period of evolution, there is always more to learn. Yes.
There's a bit of the problem, though, with using the word exist, which means to stand out from. Deity is. It does not exist. It's a huge philosophical conundrum. But to go back to an earlier point, that one could feel that they're surrounded in their own mind and heart with just darkness. How are they going to figure it out? Well, one thing Theosophy would say is, put that aside. Look around you. What darkness do you see for others? Hmm. Reach out and see what you can do. Because for every action, there's a reaction. When we act towards helping others, we are also helping ourselves.
Very true. Yes.
Can you, from a strictly theosophical standpoint, help me define soul in the standpoint of, like, Atman, Buddhi, Manas, and the four lower? Where is the soul on that? And is soul different from spirit?
Definitely. Spirit is that deific spirit that we speak about, that essence. We are an aspect of it. Soul, we could say, is the reincarnating ego in a way. That individuality part of our nature versus our personality.
Is it the whole seven? Is it Atman, Buddhi, Manas, or is it the lower four?
You can't qualify it one way or the other in that direction. It is, how can we say, if we look at the idea of it being the reincarnating ego, which we call the real man, the real thinker within, we have, shall we say, aspects that we can express through. We are that reincarnating ego. We have had a point when we knew, and then coming down through these many lifetimes, we've gotten so imbued with the exterior, the quote personality, we have forgotten what we really and truly are. We are gods in the makings. We have that ability, that perfectibility. And once you reach a certain state of perfectibility, as far as the mass of evolution, there's always more things that one can experience and develop into. So it's not any one of these aspects that you're talking about. It is the part of our nature that goes through this evolution. Because when you look at that idea, that higher triad, that Atma, Buddhi, Manas, that is your spirit, that is your storehouse of experience. And then that is the thinker that we are. These four lower are temporary. They're going to come and go with this lifetime. Prana, really, the life principle, is universal. It can, within degrees, be brought into anyone's nature. We need it to exist by. And the kama principle, the desire that sort of draws the separateness between all of us that shouldn't be there, that shouldn't really exist at all, but we have made it what it is up to this time period. So if you look at it that way, the soul, that statement should be a very big hint. It knows what it needs. Question yourself, what part of my nature knows what it needs? Behind you.
We think in the key, HPV helps us understand that a little more, if we take the time to read that. And
there's a lot on
the
soul.
We could say, really, maybe we should always qualify the soul when we speak of the soul, because there's three that we can speak of. Usually when we say soul, it's mind.
Can't hear.
But usually when we speak of the soul, there are three, and usually
right.
when we speak of it, we're talking about mind.
Mind, thinker.
But the other two are the spiritual soul, which is buddhi, and the animal soul, which is our kamic nature. So really, which of the three is our consciousness right now operating from? And in Isis Unveiled, HPV says, when man unites his human soul with the spiritual soul, he consciously becomes an immortal entity.
A knowing immortal entity. Okay?
Yes, we think that's the point. We already are.
But not
a unity of those three principles. That's what we are. But we don't know
right.
it. And if you don't know it, you can't use it consciously. So the whole object of life on this planet is for the spiritual being, the reincarnating ego, to recognize its divinity and use it in life so that all life below it gets impressed and lifted up with it. It's a beautiful thing if you stop and think about it. And before, what you said about space, well, space is given to us as analogous to deity. Space has no existence.
Right.
It is.
And we exist in it and move through it. Yes?
I wanted to go back to the what motivated us before 18 million years ago. The idea of 18 million years ago was a change in form. What the form at that time housed both male and female existence. After that, it separated. Male became one and female became the other. However, regardless to the form, the overall ideal always remained the perfection, not of the form, but the perfection of all. So that was always in existence. It didn't have to recome, it didn't have to come back into existence. That was always the existence. The only thing that changed was the form, like an actor who takes off the costume at the end of one act to put on a new costume because it wouldn't benefit the ideas trying to be expressed in the coming act.
Wait, can that put this?
Yes,
okay.
In addition to that, there's another way of saying it. The 18 million years ago, the thinker incarnated into the highest form in order to begin the process of evolution, spiritual evolution. So the form was designed by universal mind, ourselves as higher beings. But it wasn't until we entered into it that the process could begin. And it is said that it's only at the midway point. In other words, the earth and everything got to the halfway point, and we came in as teachers in that school, and now we've become sort of the idiots in that school.
Well, that's a far stretch way of putting it, yes.
Well, the term sacrifice comes to mind. And also, we come to study so that we can identify the principles. And until we realize our duty, we wear it, we use it. But we are not the lower part. We are those, as was stated, we incarnated here. So when we say, have to be careful when we use the word I, we, you, me, we have lost our identity.
True.
And here, as in the Bhagavad Gita, we discover our true self. And there's where the choice is made. Because it's a very frightening experience to realize what we are supposed to be doing. And it's a matter of identification.
Definitely so, yes.
Well,
When we speak of the evolution of the soul and all this discussion that we've had, I keep thinking that the soul at the beginning is already perfect, but doesn't know, has not experienced. It is like the seed of anything that contains everything, but has to grow and blossom and bear fruit. Or a newborn baby, normally a newborn baby is perfect, but has to grow and experience. And I think that's, in the overall, is what is happening with the soul. That the soul is that divine spark that is in all of us. That's how I would define it.
That's an aspect and a way of looking at, yes, here we...
Well, I think we call that the spiritual soul.
Right.
And it seems that we either go to the one side or the other side. Either we're looking down or we're looking up. If we're looking down, we're looking at the body, the animal life, we're looking at the just existing, acquiring, just being an animal man. And I think we realize that we're not human in the sense that we truly love one another. We care, like human qualities of loving and happiness. We're equal happiest again. Well, that's something. But anyhow.
We understand that situation you're speaking of. Each and every one of us have had that feeling of deep concern, of literally loving a mother with a child, for instance, that mothering feeling that instinctually comes out to the child in different degrees and different times. It can be off balance. But for most normal, quote, human beings on a daily basis, we've all had that feeling of something, of understanding beauty to the point where you're seeing it. It's an exterior thing and your eyes are taking it in, but you literally feel it in your body, whether it be a piece of music, a piece of art, a piece of nature. There's an essence that almost makes the hair stand up on your arms and your body. It's more than what we just see. It's that feeling of pure joy, of pure energy. Athletes have gone through those things. Musicians, artists, they are so imbued with it that it literally takes them over for a while. That essence, one could not possibly think that you could do that 24 hours a day. As it states in the Gita, when Arjuna, the warrior, finally gets to see Krishna, that light that assumes from Krishna is so overbearing, he asks him, "No, I cannot take it." To live in that on a constant period of time, could any of us realize what that might be, and maybe why we would sort of back off from it? Because initially, that light is within us, supposedly, and we can let it shine forth and come out. And that is definitely coming from something that's eternal, not something that's transitory. Way in the back.
It was said the soul is perfect, but theosophically that's just a little off the mark. It is spirit that is perfect. Ourselves as pure spiritual beings. a way of defining it is Atma is beingness, Buddhi is being, spiritual being. Manas is soul or becoming. We have to we have to reach from our own mind in this personal nature to the higher, the spiritual, and that is where perfection lies. We have to maintain that connection, and we think once we really do, we would not be overwhelmed by the sight of a pure spiritual nature. We think that's part of our goal, to so clean ourselves up that we would reflect that same light.
True, and that's why the first time Arjuna sees this essence of Krishna, which is with the understanding of Arjuna being the human nature, the warrior that we all are very familiar with, meeting its true higher nature, Krishna, that at the beginning it is a little overwhelming, but within time, within the whole story in the Gita, Arjuna too can go forth and do what he can and do the best he can, and that light can shine through. Yes.
Well, in order to access this soul wisdom, we need to be impersonal. We need to love everyone equally, including ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we need to be indifferent as to pleasure and to pain, to look at everything that comes before us as our karma and our dharma, our duty. And we need to overcome fear, because fear kills the will. It has a freezing aspect.
Yes, it does.
And we need to overcome anger, anxiety, and regret, all things that retard our development. So we have so much work to do before we can access the knowledge that's already in us. That is the conundrum, because this has been impressed on us. This soul knowledge is within. The master is within. We just have covered it up with stuff. And over all these millions of years, we've been getting involved in matter, and we've been forgetting where we came from and what our true identity is. And unfortunately, religions in general tell us that we are less than perfect and we need something outside. We don't need anything outside. It's all within.
It's difficult now, but we can say the more that we can really search, just from just the whole idea of the teaching, that we can really search and question ourselves and go within, we can see, and we could make a whole list up of things that just are not in harmony with everything else within us. And maybe sort of question ourselves, do I have the ability? Can I? And be willing to slip and slide, but get back up and just keep trying and keep trying, only because historically we know others have done it and it can be done, and it's changed everything around that individual. And that's part of this idea of brotherhood. This idea of we're all part of the whole. We kept, went through, as was stated earlier, the key is an excellent thing that a book to actually study and question through. It's done in a question and answer type thing, but it gives one a lot of meat to think about that we've probably never thought about. It's interesting when we think of this idea that all the kingdoms show the growth of soul within man. All the kingdoms. And the lower kingdoms have not the consciousness of the soul, where it is only latent. It's, we think of inherent instinct. It has a knowing and ways. There are many books that are out, devotional books that are very helpful to help us find ways towards this inner pilgrimage. The Voice of the Silence, the Book of the Golden Precincts, the Bhagavad Gita, Light on the Path, Patanjali's. There's many books out, and they're all a little different, but technically they're all saying the same thing. When we think about that intuitive nature in us, what is intuition? Could we not say it's that, as it states, that total of all our past experience? It is a direct cognition of the truth, intuition, that inner principle. If we look at it that way, and we think about the principles of life, most things start with a thought, a feeling, an action. And then will come a reaction. It tells us also, it is the spirit which is the knower, and the things known are the soul. Soul is the ever-increasing perception of the reality of spirit. Any one of these little gems that we find through the literature is a help to help us understand that omnipresent source, which is the root and the essence and the cause, the one spirit, consciousness, the one power to grow. Put those all together. It says, soul growth is not a material thing, which was brought up. It is a growth in perception, in knowing, in the realization of the spiritual part of man. These are just a few that we happened to pick up when we were going through that gave us some ideas to think about to help us possibly understand.
There's a Sufi saying that seems to be appropriate. God sleeps in minerals, dreams in flowers, and awakes in apples. And then humanity realizes awakeness.
That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful saying, because it does give us the whole step. And it also gives us the responsibility that we have in the help that we can give in the movement from the lower kingdoms. Yes.
One of the great powers that the masters, the great souls, possess is being able to see through us. They know our true nature. They know our motivations. Sometimes we don't even know what motivates us or why we do what we do. But they can help us by influencing us in a positive way, by through our hearts and our minds, not interfering with our karma, but helping us down the path. And so reading their words is very inspirational. That is, we are touched, our souls are touched by reading the words of the masters.
And that, in a way, that's a hint and a connection to the, shall we say, the sparks within us that can be ignited into a strong flame of which we really are. Yes?
Which came first, Isis Unveiled or the Secret Doctrine?
Isis was written first.
That's very interesting. It says Isis Unveiled.
Oh,
and
we're coming to that.
I understand that it was a bombshell when it came out, and that it upset everything. Much later, then we got The Secret Doctrine.
The two volumes of The Secret Doctrine.
Came after?
After, yes.
I should forget, but we have to listen. It may take a while before it dawns on us. The terminology, ISIS, unveiled.
And we'll get a large hint of that. In fact, the whole next month ought to be very, quote, enlightening because of all the key books that hold the basic teachings of the ancients. Each one is going to be brought up and an aspect of it. And it would give us a depth to at least, if we haven't searched or thought about it before, it would give us an outline of where we could find the interest to want to search.
And that wonderful song, Beautiful Dreamer, Wake Unto Me. And if we've ever seen the Pietà in Rome, there are pictures of it. Beautiful Dreamer, Awake Unto Me. And the fact that it's a female figure that is holding in her arms the male who seems to be asleep. And these terminology, we have to think about them. And all of us, everyone in this room is exposed, has already been exposed to an educational background that wasn't in existence in this country in the 1860s and 70s. Public education, we're all students of that. And if we stop to think, the gift that was given, the gifts, plural, that were given to us after 1870, and here we are trying to figure it out.
And the puzzlement is self-made puzzlement, and yet we can connect all the pieces. We have that within us. It's how do I learn to tap it? How do I learn to understand that there is a process, there is a purpose, and how do I become my own process and my own purpose is a depth that we can all touch. We wanted to just mention also the Paramites, which is interesting. There are seven of them, and they were brought up in the last meeting. We just wanted to bring them up again. A state of mindfulness, attentiveness, wisdom, study, energy, joyousness, serenity, concentration, meditation, equanimity. Learn the balance, learn the harmony. It's there, we can touch on it. And once we start to touch on it, it will change our way of looking at life and everything around us. So that soul purpose can be expressed on a daily basis in any one of the lifetimes. As we look at them, they say it's like a string of pearls. Each little pearl, each little lifetime has made that necklace. It can either be of a choker value, or it could be of what they call the opera length, the longest value. Each one is on his own pace of how it's to be done and his own timetable. But the fact that it is and can be expressed should be the most important thing in anyone's lifetime. So our class is concluded. Okay.